presents First Years, a podcast for all but geared toward adult first-time readers of Harry Potter, who need a space to enjoy each book and have adult conversations about it. My name is Sarah, and I'm honored that you've allowed me on this journey with you. Crack open a butterbeer, grab a seat, and let's discuss. Today, we're talking about owls. Welcome, everyone, to episode 62 of First Years. Today, we're going over chapter 31 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. And it's a big one. We're talking about owls. They have finally arrived. We finally get to see the process of how students essentially plan out the rest of their lives. But first, we need to talk about Ron and how he won the Quidditch match. We didn't get to see it because we were walking through the Forbidden Forest with Harry and Hermione and Hagrid. But this was quite a win for Ron. He's being celebrated and he's really soaking up all of the attention, to the point where Harry is reminded of James in the flashback he saw in Snape's memory. And I think we really need to talk about what a confidence boost this was for Ron. If you look back to book one, when they discover the mirror of Erised, he sees himself as Quidditch captain, with the Quidditch cup, and he's head boy. This stems from being the youngest boy in that family, with several very accomplished brothers in that line. Bill, Charlie, and Percy all accomplished great things and were prefects. That's a lot of pressure to live up to. And so I think in a lot of this, Ron probably has trouble carving his own path and figuring out what that looks like because of all of the traditional routes that have been taken by his brothers. Even Fred and George have made their own path and name for themselves. Quidditch captain is something Ron has wanted, but Quidditch has been a miserable experience for him thus far in this book. He's psyched himself out a lot. And he finally gained a significant confidence boost that means a lot for him, and he's enjoying every second of it. People are giving him a lot of attention and praise, which I'm sure he really hasn't gotten a lot of. I think this is an important moment for Ron, not just in Quidditch, but in general. And I wonder if this will continue to have an impact on him going forward. Do you think we'll see other moments in which he has that confidence that comes through for him? Ron is initially disappointed that Harry and Hermione weren't at the match, but once they explain exactly what happened, he understands and is completely involved in what they shared. And we're going to talk about promises in a minute, but I do want to get you thinking about why we had this scene with Grop last chapter interfere with Ron's initial success in Quidditch. We could have seen the Quidditch match, and at another time had our characters head into the forest with Hagrid. Hagrid does say it's because everyone will be distracted, but there could have been another scene in which Harry, Ron, and Hermione would have been invited to the forest by Hagrid. Why do you think it was important for Ron to not be with Harry and Hermione for this? And why do you think it was important for Harry and Hermione not to witness Ron's Quidditch greatness? Because this was definitely a conscious decision made by the author to have happened in this way. So why do you think it was decided that this was how this would go down? Do we think it's because Ron would have said, "No way, absolutely not"? Or is there something about Hermione and Harry being absent that allowed Ron to find his confidence in Quidditch? What do you think it is? And what does it signify that they were separated for these two plot points? And I think this is where we need to talk about promises. Ron says he's lost his mind. And Hermione says, "Yes, I'm starting to think he has, but unfortunately he made me and Harry promise." To which Ron says, "Well, you're going to just have to break your promise, that's all." Hermione replies, "I know, it's just that we promised." And she says it in a small voice. Promises are something that mean a lot, right? They're something we expect people to keep when they make them. And I think this is a good moment to think about when it's okay to break a promise. Promises are like verbal agreements between one or more parties. We can promise ourselves something, or we can make a promise amongst friends, right? And promises, when kept, can facilitate trust among groups of people and can break trust very easily when they're broken. We usually say we trust someone when they've shown us that we can trust them, and that may come in the form of keeping a promise they made us. When we keep promises, it can show others that we're good people, while if we break them, we're not so great. And yet I think there are circumstances in which we can break promises. I think I'm on Ron's side here. I think they can break their promise because it's literally something that puts their lives on the line. I also think when someone is backed into a promise like this and feels pressured to promise, that's probably another situation in which someone can back out of a promise and break it. When someone is in danger, I think that's a good one to break. If the promise is hurting someone, I think you can break that too. What are others that you can think of? I think the breaking of promises doesn't automatically mean someone's a bad person, depending on the circumstances. I think in this circumstance, where Hagrid is doing something that's most likely illegal and asking 15-year-olds to put their lives on the line, I think that's more than enough of an excuse to break that promise. But look at how nervous Hermione is here in this scene. She literally is feeling guilty because she promised Hagrid that she'd help. And Ron is a little more casual of like, who cares? We can't do this, so we're just not going to do it. She's usually our very practical friend, and yet a promise means something significant to her, even when it puts her in danger. While this kind of thing doesn't mean as much to Ron, who can clearly see that they probably shouldn't be doing this. And what's the difference here? Is it that Ron just doesn't take promises as seriously as Hermione? Could it be that Ron wasn't there to see Hagrid cry and how much it meant to him? That could be a possibility. Or could it just be that Ron right now is the practical one, and Hermione maybe isn't being so practical at this moment in her life? As we move into exam time, we see how stressed the students are and how there's a black market for study aids that opens, just like how it happens in the Muggle world. This chapter is what the DA was leading up to, right? They knew they needed to pass these exams, and so they worked in secret to ensure that they would be able to. And it occurred to me just how much of an impact new heads of schools can have on an entire generation of children. If Umbridge had her way, everyone would have failed their OWLs, which, yes, would have ensured that they wouldn't have uprisen against the ministry, maybe, but also would have poorly reflected on her as a headmistress. You don't want your students mass failing the exact exam that you're supposed to teach them. I'm not sure that she thought this through. If you have an entire generation of children failing their Defense Against the Dark Arts OWL, then you are eliminating certain job opportunities for them in one swoop. And that's probably the point for Umbridge, but how terrifying is that? For those students not in the DA, how did they do on the exams? What career options are now closed to them because they didn't get the required grade on their exam because Umbridge decided she just wasn't going to teach anything? It's horrifying how much certain adults can influence children's lives, and for the long term. She isn't just filling them with lies and false information and trying to build a culture that bows down to the ministry, but she's literally leading them down a path that affects all sorts of career paths that they could have been open to them. What are they going to do when there aren't any wizards with the appropriate OWLs to work in the Auror office, or even get their NEWTs? It has far-reaching consequences for the entire workforce of the wizarding world and this generation's future. Yet Harry, at least, does very well, and we can assume that everyone who is in the DA did just as well as him and passed their exams. Then the two final exams become very interesting. During the astronomy exam, Umbridge tries to essentially capture Hagrid, and it causes complete chaos that the students are witnessing during their exam time. And during this scene, McGonagall gets hit with like 5 stunners to the chest. One of the things that really hit me was that they have their exam the same time as normal the following day. They didn't postpone the exam at all to give students time to digest what they just saw, because that has to have been traumatic and scary. They just continue on as normal. But we see Harry even struggle with this exam. And yes, we know History of Magic isn't his best subject, but he probably would have been thinking a little more clearly if he hadn't been on lack of sleep and thinking about exactly what had happened during the astronomy exam. He falls asleep during the exam, and yet again, we end up in the ministry in his dream. But this time, something's very different. Sirius is being tortured by Voldemort. This is chapter 31 of 38. So it's safe to say this is a catalyst that kickstarts the action of the end of the book. So where do you think this will go? How do you think Harry will try to help Sirius? What do you think will happen to Hagrid? What about McGonagall? Harry's been dreaming about the ministry throughout this entire book. There's been talk of this weapon that Voldemort wants since we discovered what the Order of the Phoenix is. How do you think this will all culminate in the end of the book? Let us know at firstyearspodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on Instagram and Twitter @firstyearspod. You can find me on Instagram and TikTok @veritasarahm, VERITASARAHM. My personal Instagram and TikTok are not spoiler-free, but First Years always will be. Don't forget, if you rate and review the podcast and leave your name in Hogwarts House, you will get a shout-out on here, as well as earn house points for your house. We're getting close to the end, guys. I hope you are as excited as I am. For next episode, you need to read chapters 32 and 33, and I will see you guys next time. First Years is a production of Matchbook. It's produced by Quinn Parker and myself, Sarah Jones-Dittmeyer. All sources can be found in our show notes or on our website at authorsarahjonesdittmeyer.info/firstyearspodcast. That's Sarah with an H, and Dittmeyer is spelled Dittmeier. Please remember that staying a Harry Potter fan is the biggest form of revolt that you can have, and we are committed to continuing to make this fandom and this community safe and welcoming to everybody.